You are attending in the newborn nursery and are examining Larry Adams, a two-day-old boy born at 35 weeks gestation, before his discharge home with his parents. The pregnancy and delivery were otherwise uncomplicated. As you palpate for his testes, you are unable to locate the right testis. The remainder of his neonatal course and physical exam are entirely normal. As you prepare to share your findings with his parents, you consider: what are the possible locations for his right testis? What is the best management, and how will you explain this to his parents? Consider your answers as we begin this next episode. Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing reproductive medicine from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started demonstrating how kids are not little adults. After completing this section, you will be able to: 1. Describe the normal development of the male and female reproductive systems. 2. Compare and contrast congenital anomalies of the uterus and vagina. 3. Compare and contrast congenital anomalies of the testes, scrotum, and penile urethra. And 4. Compare and contrast disorders of sexual development, or DSDs, including ovotesticular DSD, 46XX DSD, and 46XY DSD. Part 1. Development of the male and female reproductive systems. Before we discuss the congenital disorders of the reproductive tract, let's review the development of the reproductive system. Both the male and female reproductive organs and structures are derived from the intermediate mesoderm and lie adjacent to the primitive kidneys, the mesonephros. Early on in development, these include the mesonephric, or Wolfian duct, and paramesonephric, or Mullerian duct, as well as the undifferentiated or indifferent gonads. Ultimately, the male and female reproductive tracts need to develop into a path that starts with the gonads and connects to the outside world. Early on in development, the opening to the outside world is called the urogenital sinus, and the mesonephric duct and paramesonephric duct connect the indifferent gonads to the urogenital sinus. What determines whether these structures will develop into a male versus female reproductive system? Well, let's first consider how an indifferent gonad develops into either an ovary or a testis. In males, a gene called sex-determining region Y, located on the short arm of the Y chromosome, produces a gene product called testis-determining factor, or TDF, a transcription factor protein. Expression of TDF allows the indifferent gonad to become a testis. In females, the lack of a Y chromosome and lack of expression of TDF allows the indifferent gonad to become an ovary. Moving along the reproductive tract, in males, the internal reproductive organs, including the epididymis, vas deferens, seminal vesicles, and ejaculatory duct, will develop from the mesonephric duct, whereas the paramesonephric duct largely regresses. These events are regulated by hormonal influences produced by the developing testis. Testosterone allows persistence of the mesonephric duct and development of the male internal reproductive organs and tract, whereas anti-Mullerian hormone causes regression of the paramesonephric duct. In females, the absence of testosterone and anti-Mullerian hormone allows the paramesonephric duct to give rise to the fallopian tubes, uterus, and upper vagina, and likewise, their absence leads to regression of the mesonephric duct. The two female ducts begin lateral to the mesonephrus, but fuse together in the midline before reaching the urogenital sinus as one, similar to how the two fallopian tubes meet at the midline uterus, which then eventually communicates with the outside world. Finally, the urogenital sinus forms into the most distal parts of the reproductive organs, the urethra and prostate in males, and the lower vagina in females. We'll discuss how this occurs in a moment when we talk more about development of the external reproductive structures. But first, let's review our knowledge with a question break. Which internal reproductive structures arise from the paramesonephric duct as compared to the mesonephric ducts? In females, the upper vagina, uterus, and fallopian tubes arise from the paramesonephric ducts, whereas in males, The seminal vesicles, epididymis, ejaculatory duct, and vas deferens arise from the mesonephric ducts. After the testis and ovary form, each descend from their origins in the lumbar posterior abdominal wall to its final location. The ovaries descend down into the pelvis, and the testes descend all the way through the inguinal canal and into the scrotum. A structure called the gubernaculum is present in both sexes and facilitates this descent. The gubernaculum attaches to the caudal end of the gonad, pulling it down towards the developing labia majora or scrotal swelling. This makes me think of our patient Larry. Maybe his right testis is somewhere along the path that the gubernaculum takes it, anywhere from its origin in the posterior abdominal wall to the pelvis or the inguinal canal. Now, this brings us to the external reproductive structures. The external genitalia in both females and males develop from primitive structures called the genital tubercle, urogenital folds and urogenital sinus, and labioscrotal swellings. If we consider these structures anteriorly to posteriorly, the genital tubercle is the most anterior structure and eventually forms the clitoris and vestibular bulbs, or the glans penis and corpus cavernosum and spongiosum of the penis. The urogenital folds and urogenital sinus are the next structures as we move posteriorly. These form the labia minora and distal portion of the vagina and urethra in females, and the ventral shaft of the penis, the urethra, and the prostate in males. Lastly, the most posterior of these primitive structures are the labioscrotal swellings, and these form the labia majora or scrotum in females and males, respectively. These structures remain undifferentiated until around 8 weeks of gestation, when testosterone and dihydrate testosterone in males and estrogen in females act and promote sex differentiation, which is completed by around week 12 of gestation. After having just reviewed typical development of the reproductive tract, let's consider what happens when development progresses abnormally. Part 2. What congenital anomalies can arise in the female reproductive system? Let's first focus on 3 congenital anomalies of the uterus and 2 congenital anomalies of the vagina. In normal development, the left and right paramesonephric ducts fuse together to give rise to the uterus, cervix, and superior part of the vagina. As this occurs, the fused wall in the uterine midline, called the uterovaginal septum, is resorbed, creating one interior space, the uterine cavity, that opens into the upper vagina. Congenital anomalies of the uterus may arise either from failure of fusion of the paramesonephric ducts or from failure of resorption of the uterovaginal septum. Abnormalities related to failed resorption include a septate uterus. Abnormalities related to failed or incomplete fusion include a uterus didelphis and a bicorniate uterus, respectively. A septate uterus is the most common uterine congenital anomaly. It forms when the paramesonephric ducts fuse normally, creating the temporary midline uterovaginal septum, but the septum is not completely resorbed. Pregnancy is possible for women with a septate uterus, but carries an increased risk of complications, including miscarriage, premature labor, and malpresentation of the fetus. Management of this anomaly is surgical removal of the septum, called a septoplasty. Partial failure of fusion of the paramesonephric ducts results in a bicorniate uterus. In this case, the fundus, or superior region of the uterus, fails to fuse, but the inferior regions, such as the lower uterus, cervix, and upper vagina, fuse normally. The name bi equals 2, cornu equals horn, reflects the horn-like shape of the 2 unfused superior uterine regions. As with a septate uterus, pregnancy is possible but carries an increased risk of complications, including miscarriage, premature labor, and malpresentation of the fetus. A double uterus, or uterus didelphis, results from complete failure of fusion of the paramesonephric ducts. This results in 2 separate uteri, usually with 2 cervices and often 2 vaginas. As with septate and bicornate uteri, pregnancy is possible but carries an increased risk of complications, including miscarriage, premature labor, and malpresentation of the fetus. Let's stop here for a quick review. What is the mechanism leading to the formation of a bicornuate uterus? The mechanism leading to the formation of a bicornuate uterus is failure of the paramesonephric ducts in the fundic region of the uterus to fuse. This results in two fundic regions, but a normal lower uterus, cervix, and vagina. A hysterosalpingogram is an imaging test that can be performed to identify these anomalies. This is performed by injecting a radio-opaque dye into the cervix. The dye moves superiorly up the reproductive tract, illustrating the internal structure of the upper vagina, uterus, and fallopian tubes, making them visible on X-rays of the pelvis. Now, let's discuss two congenital anomalies of the vagina. We'll begin with vaginal atresia, which is an absence of or a very narrow vaginal opening. In most forms of vaginal atresia, the upper vagina abruptly ends due to failure of the lower vagina to develop normally from the urogenital sinus. In most patients with vaginal atresia, the upper part of the vagina, derived from the paramesonephric ducts, is typically normal. Females with vaginal atresia typically have a small pouch or dimple where the vaginal opening should be. It often presents with primary amenorrhea and/or cyclic abdominal pain because there is no outlet for menses. It's clinically important to note that this condition rarely exists in isolation and is most commonly part of a syndrome including other congenital anomalies. Another congenital anomaly of the vagina is called a Gartner cyst. This occurs when the mesonephric duct fails to completely degenerate. A Gartner cyst specifically refers to a remnant of a mesonephric duct that lies along the lateral aspect of the vagina. Large Gartner cysts may impinge on the lateral vagina and neighboring urinary structures, leading to abnormal micturition and painful intercourse. Question break. Which embryonic structure is a Gartner cyst a remnant of? The answer is that Gartner cysts are remnants of the mesonephric ducts. And now let's move on to congenital anomalies of the male reproductive organs. Part 3. What congenital anomalies can arise in the male reproductive system? As we discuss congenital anomalies of the male reproductive system, let's focus on one congenital anomaly of the testes, one congenital anomaly in the scrotum, and two congenital anomalies of the penile urethra. Cryptorchidism, or an undescended testicle, is a failure of one or both of the testes to descend from their origin in the posterior abdominal wall into the scrotum. The affected testis may be found anywhere along the descent pathway from its origin in the abdominal wall to the pelvis or in the inguinal canal. The testes complete their descent late in gestation. Therefore, cryptorchidism is a condition that is strongly associated with prematurity. Clinically, it presents with an empty scrotal sac, typically identified on physical examination of a newborn male, much like with our two-day-old patient, Larry. Infertility is an important complication from cryptorchidism because the temperature-sensitive testicular Sertoli cells, which are responsible for sperm maturation, do not function well at core body temperature, keeping in mind scrotal temperature is lower than core body temperature. Many undescended testes will spontaneously complete their descent within the first year of life, so surgical correction is not planned right away. If they fail to spontaneously descend, surgery is needed to correct their position. Males with undescended testes also have an increased risk for development of testicular germ cell tumors, which is another reason to correct their position. Let's test your knowledge with a quick question. Cryptorchidism is associated with which two possible negative sequelae? Cryptorchidism is associated with infertility and increased risk for testicular germ cell tumors. Another congenital anomaly of the male reproductive tract is a hydrocele. Hydrocele literally means water-filled sac, and it represents fluid present in the tunica vaginalis that partially surrounds each testicle in the scrotum. Hydroceles can be congenital or can arise at any age after birth. Congenital hydroceles are divided into communicating or non-communicating hydroceles. Both arise when the processus vaginalis, a connection between the peritoneum and the tunica vaginalis, is patent or open, allowing peritoneal fluid to flow into the tunica vaginalis. Normally, the processus vaginalis is obliterated late in development, so hydroceles are also more common in premature newborn boys. Non-communicating hydroceles, those in which the processus vaginalis has been obliterated, are relatively common and form during late development, before the processus vaginalis lumen is obliterated, and usually resolve on their own during the first year of life. Communicating hydroceles are less common. They occur when the processus vaginalis is not obliterated and remains open. Communicating hydroceles do not typically resolve spontaneously and require surgical treatment. In addition, if the processus vaginalis opening is large, an inguinal hernia may develop. Because the processus vaginalis closes late in development, both types of hydroceles as well as inguinal hernias are associated with prematurity. Last but not least, we'll move our discussion to two congenital anomalies of the penile urethra, hypospadias and epispadias. Hypospadias is a condition in which the urethral orifice, or meatus, opens somewhere along the ventral surface of the penis, rather than at the tip of the glands. This is the most common congenital anomaly of the penis. It arises from abnormal development of the penile urethra, specifically when the urethral folds fail to fuse normally along the ventral midline of the penis. It is associated with chordae, which is a curvature of the penis, more often downward. Epispadias is a condition in which the urethral orifice opens somewhere along the dorsal surface of the penis, rather than at the tip of the glands. This is far less common than hypospadias. Epispadias arises when the genital tubercle is located more dorsally than normal. Epispadias is often associated with a more complex condition called bladder extrophy, in which the bladder forms exteriorly to the abdominal wall. Let's complete our discussion of congenital disorders of the reproductive system by considering disorders of sexual development. Part 4. What are disorders of sexual development? Disorders of sexual development, or DSDs, are defined as congenital conditions associated with atypical development of chromosomal, gonadal, or anatomic sex. This involves discordance between genetic sex and/or internal sexual organs and/or external genitalia in an individual. The terminology to name, categorize, and describe these conditions is in flux. In fact, research demonstrates affected individuals may experience negative impact from certain terms, affecting their decisions to utilize healthcare. We will use the terminology suggested by the Chicago Consensus in 2005, and will refer to the more outdated terms only for historical purposes and context. DSDs are rare anomalies. The three that we'll discuss are ovotesticular DSD, previously called true hermaphroditism, 46XX DSD, and 46XY DSD, both previously termed pseudohermaphroditism. Two etiologies associated with these conditions are congenital adrenal hyperplasia and androgen insensitivity syndrome, respectively. Most patients with ovotestecular DSD have a 46XX genotype. These individuals have both ovarian and testicular tissue, though both are usually non-functional. The external genitalia may appear female, male, or a mix of both. Patients with 46XX DSD have, by definition, a 46XX genotype. They have ovaries, but their external genitalia either appears male or ambiguous. This DSD is caused by fetal exposure to androgens, and it may be helpful for remembering this, that from earlier in our discussion, we noted that androgens like testosterone and dihydrotestosterone cause the undifferentiated external genitalia to develop into male structures. The most common etiology of 46XX DSD is congenital adrenal hyperplasia, a genetic abnormality of the enzyme 21-alpha-hydroxylase. This condition makes it so the adrenal glands are unable to synthesize adequate levels of glucocorticoids and mineralocorticoids and causing excess production of androgens by the adrenal cortex, leading to varying degrees of virilization, or masculinization, of individuals with a 46XX genotype. Patients with the 46XY disorder of sexual development have a 46XY genotype, as well as testes, but have external genitalia that either appear female or ambiguous. This condition is caused by abnormalities related to production of or responsiveness to male hormones such as testosterone and anti-Mullerian hormone in the fetus. The most common etiology of this condition is called androgen insensitivity syndrome. In this disorder, the androgen receptor is mutated and unable to respond to testosterone. The lack of testosterone effect leads the undifferentiated external genitalia to develop into female structures rather than male structures. Okay, now for a question break. What are two genetic conditions that may lead to 46XX DSD and 46XY DSD? Two genetic etiologies that may cause disorders of sexual development include congenital adrenal hyperplasia and androgen insensitivity syndrome. And that's all I have today for congenital disorders of the reproductive system. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. Can you identify the embryogenic progenitors of the male reproductive tract and the hormonal signals that regulate its development? In males, under the regulation of testosterone and anti-Mullerian hormone, the gonads differentiate into testes, and the mesonephric ducts form the epididymis, vas deferens, ejaculatory ducts, and seminal vesicles. The paramesonephric ducts regress. Can you identify the embryogenic progenitors of the female reproductive tract and the hormonal signals that regulate its development? In females, in the absence of testosterone and anti-Mullerian hormone, the gonads differentiate into ovaries, and the paramesonephric ducts form the fallopian tubes, uterus, and superior part of the vagina. The mesonephric ducts regress. Next, can you compare and contrast three congenital anomalies of the uterus? Uterine abnormalities include those arising from lack of fusion of the paramesonephric ducts, such as uterus didelphus and bicornuate uterus, and those caused by lack of uterine septal resorption, such as septate uterus. And can you describe two congenital anomalies of the vagina? Vaginal anomalies include vaginal atresia and Gartner cysts, the latter being remnants of the mesonephric duct in the lateral aspect of the vagina. Next, can you describe a congenital anomaly of the testis and of the scrotum? Cryptorchidism is a failure of one or both testes to descend into the scrotum and is associated with infertility and increased risk for development of testicular germ cell tumors. A congenital hydrocele is a benign collection of fluid in the scrotum that forms when the processus vaginalis is patent. And can you describe two congenital anomalies of the penile urethra? Hypospadias and epispadias are abnormal openings of the urethra, hypospadias being more common with the urethral opening on the ventral surface, whereas epispadias is an abnormal opening of the urethra on the dorsal surface, rather than at the tip of the glands. Last, can you compare and contrast disorders of sexual development, or DSDs, including ovotesticular DSD, 46XX DSD, and 46XY DSD? Disorders of sexual development, although rare, include first, ovotesticular DSD, in which the patient is typically 46XX genotype with both ovarian and testicular tissues and ambiguous external genitalia. Second, 46XX DSD, in which the patient has ovaries and masculinized external genitalia, most often is caused by congenital adrenal hyperplasia. And third, 46XY DSD occurs when a patient has testes but feminized external genitalia, and this is most often caused by androgen insensitivity syndrome. Armed with your newfound knowledge of congenital disorders of the reproductive system, let's revisit our patient's story from the beginning of this episode. If you recall, your patient, Larry Adams, is a two-day-old boy with a history of 35-week prematurity, and you were unable to palpate his right testis and his scrotum on his physical exam. As you prepare to discuss these findings, you consider what are the possible locations for his right testis, and what is the best management, and how will you explain this to his parents? You recall that after the testis form, each descends from its origins in the lumbar posterior abdominal wall to its final location in the scrotum. A structure called the gubernaculum facilitates this descent, attaching to the caudal end of the testis, pulling the testis down to its destination from the posterior abdominal wall through the pelvis and the inguinal canal and into the scrotum. You also note that this descent occurs relatively late during gestation. You suspect, given Larry's prematurity, that his right testis is still somewhere along this path. Given his otherwise normal prenatal history, neonatal course, and physical exam, you are reassured he does not have a genetic or syndromic etiology, and note that many undescended testes will spontaneously descend in the first year of life. You are able to reassure Larry's parents that this may be the case, but caution that it's important his primary care provider ensures this occurs, as if it were to remain undescended, it would ideally be treated surgically to better preserve its fertility and reduce risk and be able to monitor for other problems such as testicular cancer down the line. And that's all I have for congenital disorders of the reproductive system. Thanks for joining me. If you like this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Stay healthy out there.